Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
All right, well, let's get into this thing about refugees. You know, ever since Trump's taken office, all of a sudden this has just been a top shelf topic with everybody. It's all over social media. People are unfriending me because of it. And I think that there's a biblical balance out there. And I know that I read a recent blog post of yours and really enjoyed just the balance that you brought to it from Scripture. Ever since the day Adam and Eve rejected the plan of God for their lives, people have been living like refugees all over the planet.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the current refugee crisis that is on the front of the news for all of us, it's a surprise to most Americans, as if the whole situation of refugees needing a new place to start a new life is a new thing. And the reality of it is, it's always been that way because of sin. When Adam and Eve rejected God, the fall happened, and people have been lovers of themselves more than lovers of God and one another. And this is sort of the historical fact of what's happened down through the centuries. And for the first time ever, I think for us as Americans, we're having to come face to face with the reality of refugees from countries we really don't feel comfortable with, maybe coming to our country and invading our neighborhood as neighbors. So, Brian, I think the issue is so important and has so many layers to it that I thought it would be a good idea if you and I took a couple of podcasts, sort of like a small series of short podcasts, and sort of looked at the whole refugee issue from four different angles. And my thought, sort of the overarching thought of this, is like understanding refugee resettlement realities and looking at it from a fourfold view, using four different lenses. And so that's what we're going to do over the next few podcasts. These are going to be shorter than normal. And we're going to be dealing with one specific aspect of the whole refugee issue, looking at it through four different lenses. Does that make sense?
That's a great idea. So do we want to tackle the first one in this podcast?
Yeah, I think we should. And I think the best place to start is to talk about just the facts. What are definitions of refugees? What is a refugee? Deal with the whole issue of how does a person who's currently a refugee get a chance or an opportunity at a new life in another country? So that's kind of my thought, that we're going to cover that in this first podcast. Then what I want to do in the next podcast is we'll take a look at the whole refugee situation from a sovereignty of God lens, how God's orchestration of his creation, where refugees fit and all that. And then we'll, in the third podcast, I want to kind of focus the lens on the reality of the kingdom of God and how it exists within all countries on the planet and the role of his kingdom and his people in refugee ministry. And then finally, in that final podcast, I want to take a look at the opportunities that are there for those that truly follow Jesus to see the possibility of refugees being resettled into their neighborhoods as an opportunity to participate in what God's ultimately going to accomplish, rather than an obstacle or an impediment to the lifestyle that they want.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so important for us as followers of Jesus to have a biblical perspective, because I think that we're getting our whole framework of how to think about this from the media. I don't think that's where we need to be drawn our information.
Yeah, and that's absolutely true, especially if we claim to be followers of Jesus and we say that the Bible is God's word. Now, we need to have a little different view on what's taking place than most of the other people do. So what I want to do with this one, and Brian, just kind of feedback as we go along, is I want to just kind of lay out a couple of factual things having to do with refugees. So for those of you that have never really thought through what are we talking about when we talk about a refugee, let me give you a definition. So this is sort of a definition that is used by the United Nations. You'll find it if you just Google it. What is the definition of a refugee? A refugee is a person who's had to flee their home because of an incident that is taking place. That incident could be a natural disaster, a catastrophe of some kind. It could be they're being persecuted because of their religion. For a number of reasons, there are people that want to take their lives, and for them to stay in the location they're at is to put their lives at risk. So a refugee is somebody who's had to flee to stay alive, and they're now living in a place that's not their home. So that's kind of the larger generic definition of what a refugee is. It's not somebody who's left their home because they want a better life in another country. It's not somebody who's left their home for economic reasons or a greater future. It's somebody that's been forced to leave the place where they've been living because their life is in danger from one source or another. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. It sounds to me like the person that volunteers to leave would more fit in the category of an immigrant, someone that's migrating to another place rather than being forced. And right now, Syria, what's happening in the Middle East ever since the Arab Spring, all of those are what's in the news, really driving what our idea of a refugee is. And, you know, the news is always scary about it, but you mentioned the idea of, you know, people also fleeing from natural disaster. And those people, all those people, whether it's war or natural disaster, they need help.
Absolutely. They need help. And, you know, with my time in ministry to refugees, both in Nepal and Thailand, refugee camps in Nepal and Thailand, and then my time in Phoenix dealing on a day-to-day basis with refugees that are resettled there from around the world, the key thing to understand about a refugee is that all of them, at least initially, would prefer to go back to where they came from. They want to go back and live back in their city, in their village, in their town. And the reality of it is they can't do that because to do that would put their life in danger. So that's a big distinction and something that people need to keep in mind. Now, let me share another sort of aspect of understanding the definition of a refugee, because there's now two categories under the umbrella of refugee. There's what's called internally displaced persons, or IDPs. They are refugees because they've had to flee their home or flee their village to preserve their lives. But we call them internally displaced persons, or IDPs, because they've relocated someplace within their own country. So, for example, people that would have to flee from Mosul in Iraq would flee to another city in Iraq. They're still in their own country. But they're not in their own village. They're not in their own town. They certainly are in refugee status, but they're in what is referred to as IDPs, internally displaced within their own country. So that's one category of refugee. And then the one that I think most people think about when they think about refugees is the refugee who basically it isn't safe for them to stay in their country at all. And so they flee to the closest neighboring country and begin to take up residence there, hopefully just temporarily, until something changes back home. And so it's usually a country that's nearby where they can walk to, or they can get to by public transportation. If they're blessed enough to have a vehicle, they go there by vehicle. Or, as you see what's going on a lot in those Middle Eastern countries, they get to the coast and they get on a boat and they flee to another country. So when you think of what most people think of when they think of refugees, they're not thinking of IDPs, the internally displaced persons. They're thinking of people that have fled their country. A couple of things to keep in mind about that, Brian, is that refugees that flee to the nearby country or some country so that they can be safe, most cases, those countries don't want them there. Most of the time, the countries the refugees flee to, their economies are not that strong. They've got a lot of other issues going on within their own country. And so when these refugees come trying to preserve their life, these countries generally don't want them there. And so they just sort of accommodate them, hoping that they're only going to be there temporarily for a while. And as history has shown, they end up being there sometimes for 10, 15, 20 years, where they've been living in a country that really doesn't want them there, and sort of they're staying in camps. And they can't participate in the day-to-day life of the other people in that country because they're in refugee status.
Yeah, when I was a missionary, Jeff, I worked in South Sudan and northern Uganda during the Sudanese Civil War. And in South Sudan, we worked with a lot of internally displaced people. There was a lot of difficulty there because lots of the folks were from different tribes, even within the same country. They were different languages. And so it was a difficult life. On the Ugandan side of the border were refugees living in United Nations camps for over 15 years. I mean, they had full-on villages in UN camps.
Yeah, and that's it. They become sort of countries within countries. but they don't have all the blessings and all the other things that come with being a part of a country. So those are just some basic things I think that most people need to understand. There's one more category that I want to share too, that I think it would be helpful for people to understand, and that's the idea of those that are seeking asylum. Those that are seeking asylum are called asylees, and that's an important distinction to make. Now, a person who is seeking asylum is generally a person who's come from a country into another country, let's say from a Middle Eastern country to America for some reason, either to go to school or on business or to attend a conference or to visit family. And then something changes in their home country, the one that they came from, and now their life is endangered if they go back. So they're already here in the U.S. on some type of visa, acceptably, and now their home country has fallen apart. And so the State Department has a category called asylum where they can apply to begin a new life here in America without ever going back to their country because it's dangerous for them to be there. They, in a sense, they're kind of like a refugee, but they're in a whole different category because they weren't forced from their home to flee for their lives, you know, by some event that took place or what was going on the ground in their country. It happened after they were already gone from their country. And so now they're in a separate category. They become what we call an asylee. The State Department covers all that, but it's important to make that distinction between an asylee, a refugee, and actually just an immigrant, somebody who's come into America to begin a new life here because they have family here or whatever.
I really appreciate you making those distinctions. The bottom line I come to is that refugees are not opportunists. They're really trying to survive.
That's exactly right. They are not opportunists. They're in survival mode. And literally, I would say 80% of the hundreds of refugees that I've met and that I know, probably 80% of them, if their countries settled down and it was safe to go back, they would go back. But the reality of it is, it's too dangerous for them to go back. Things are still too chaotic for them there, and so forth. With that, let me kind of transition over into, okay, so a guy's fled from his country, let's say a country like a Middle Eastern country, let's say Iraq, or let's say from Myanmar, somebody from the former country of Burma, their ethnicity is being persecuted by the government, their religion is being persecuted, they need to flee to a nearby country. What's the pathway for them to actually be, for them to be given a new chance to start a new life in a different country? Well, the International Refugee Oversight Entity is called the United Nations High Commissioner on Refugees, or High Commission on Refugees. It's called the UNHCR. And the UNHCR is the recognized, accepted international umbrella where refugees are tried, where people try to meet the needs of refugees. They have around the world, there are offices called International Organization of Migration, IOM offices, that are under the umbrella of the UN High Commission on Refugees. And these offices around the world are there to document the stories of refugees, to basically look at somebody who's living in a country that's not their own, who's had to flee. The IOM has an office there, and the IOM tries to make contact with them and get their story. Why are they in this country? What happened in their homeland? The IOM is basically the organization that registers and validates, hey, this person is actually a refugee. So if you think of it in terminology that's being used today, it's the IOM is the first level of vetting. So the IOM does research. They get their names and their dates, where you know, their birth dates, where they're from, what took place in their hometown, why they're in this country that they're in now. They gather up all the facts. And then basically what the IOM does is validates. They research to find out if that person is telling the truth as much as they can. And then they then validate if they are actually a refugee. And then they sort of stamp them, you might say. They give them a stamp and say, you're technically a refugee. And so you meet our criteria. So what that means is that the IOM, under the umbrella of the UNHCR, says, okay, we've got this group of people that are legitimately refugees, and they need a new start in a new country. They need to be sent to a place where they can begin a new life. And then the UNHCR goes and contacts countries around the world and says, hey, how many people who are in refugee status, that we validated their refugee status, how many of them are you willing to accept to give them a new life in your country?
Okay, so I have a question for you.
Yes.
Let's look at the Syrian refugee crisis right now. Whole families are ending up on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. They get into a boat. They cross over into Greece or somewhere on the northern side of the Mediterranean. When do they start to be in this process? Before they get in the boats or after they land on the shores in Europe?
No. They are that process doesn't begin until they've already landed wherever they land. So what happens is they would go through Greece or whatever, and the location where they sort of stop and settle down, usually the country that they're in now sort of boxes them off or keeps them within a restricted area. And then at that point, you have sort of a, what we would call like a refugee camp or a refugee settlement. The IOM would then go to them and begin doing the research on why are you here, what's your story, and begin that process of registering them as a refugee. So the refugees don't usually initiate the contact with the IOM. The IOM initiates the contact with the refugees with the approval of the government that the IOM exists within.
So I want to take that question one step further.
Okay.
We know people that, you know, work all throughout Europe as missionaries. And so we have friends that work in Hungary. There was just a big, massive, this migration of people from Greece, trying to get to Germany, trying to get to Austria, trying to get to northern countries. When do these people officially go into refugee status? Did some of this process take place and then the refugees hit the road, or do they have to finally land somewhere?
No, they have to land somewhere. They're in refugee status when they leave their country. So just as a condition, they're in refugee status when they leave their country. The acknowledgement, the recognition that they're refugees doesn't come until the IOM makes contact with them. And the IOM generally doesn't make contact with them while they're in transit. That's the key thing to keep in mind. When refugees are in transit, the IOM can't do the background, the investigation, spend the time with them that they need to do. Once those refugees are kind of settled in the location where they have nowhere else to go, they're sort of stuck there. They can't go any further down the line, whether it's in Hungary, whether it's in Germany, whether it's in Croatia, or, you know, think of Malaysia. If you look at the Asian context, they flee, they land there, and now they've sort of begun life in this other place. That's the point at which the IOM tries to make contact with them, and then starts the process of determining whether they're truly a refugee or not.
I think that's super, super helpful, because again, we get all our information from the media, and the hottest story is these displaced people migrating through countries and the countries trying to manage this crisis of people just tracking through their country with their families. But it's also given Christians an amazing chance to represent Christ as these folks are in crisis.
Yeah, in many ways, you know, I would, and I may get some backlash on this, but in many ways, if you think about the opportunity, especially Christians that are living over in the countries where refugees are fleeing to directly, it's similar to those heroes from World War II that when the Jews fled from Hitler's armies and the Gestapo, knowing that if they were captured by the Germans, they would be sent to the concentration camps and the ovens, in the same way that we would hold up the Polish people or Germans that tried to rescue Jews. Well, so it is for people that reach out to refugees that are coming through their country. They're fleeing for their lives. Their place they're coming from is dangerous. And even though they may just be transitioning here or they may take up residence here, I think just humanity says, hey, we need to try to help them in whatever way we can. And Christians are usually at the forefront of doing that.
That's absolutely right. It's heroic, and Jews at the time during World War II were not received by very many countries.
No, they weren't. And that's why the individuals that did house them, Schindler and, you know, all the people that we've heard of, there's books written about them, because there were so few people willing to risk their lifestyle and even their own lives to help people whose lives were in danger that those people became heroes. It should not have been that way, because many of those people claim to be followers of Christ, but that's exactly the way it was. And there are some parallels with the situation today. So, hey, one more thing I want to cover is I want to talk now about the U.S. situation. How does a refugee actually get into the U.S.? Well, you've kind of got the bigger picture of you've got refugees, they're in refugee camps, they're in some other country that's not their own. The IOM has registered them as missionaries. I mean, excuse me, as refugees. And now what the IOM does and UNHCR says to all the countries of the world, hey, we want you to, how many refugees will you resettle and give a new life? Well, in the United States, refugees are resettled under the State Department. Within the U.S. State Department, there's what's called the ORR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And the way our mechanism is for refugees to be resettled in America comes as this entity under the State Department called the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And the way they do that is through nonprofits. They're voluntary organizations, nonprofits, who exist to sort of help refugees get a new life here. There's nine what are called VOLAGs that the State Department contracts with to resettle refugees. Basically, the State Department says, hey, we're going to accept 80,000 refugees from these different countries. They go to the VOLAGs. They say, how many will each of you take? And then those VOLAGs will say, okay, well, we'll take 10,000, we'll take 10,000, we'll take 10,000. And then those VOLAGs, those voluntary organizations that resettle refugees, they then disperse the refugees around our country to the locations where they have offices and the supporting resources, like people, a lot of entry-level jobs, a cheaper housing market. These refugee resettlement agencies, the VOLAGs, basically determine where the refugees are going to go unless they already have a family member in the country. Then they try to resettle them there. But otherwise, they're all settled under these nine nonprofits. And just to name a few of them, the big secular ones called International Rescue Committee, IRC. You have Catholic Charities. You have Lutheran Social Services. You have Jewish World Services. There's an evangelical one called World Relief. And then there's four other ones who basically are the on-the-ground apparatus that the State Department approves of to give refugees a new start at life here in America.
That's helpful. We'll go ahead and put links to these organizations just so people can get familiar with who they are, what they do, and what other kind of services they offer.
That's a great idea. And especially for those that are listening that are serious about maybe wanting to help refugees, the place to start is to look towards whether these organizations are in your community already, and then talk to them, because they'll be the channel, the on-ramp, for you to actually engage in helping the refugees that are starting a new life here in America. A couple last facts, and then I want to close this. At any one point in time, there's 15 million people living as refugees on our planet. That's not including IDPs, internally displaced persons. I'm talking about people that have left their country and now live in a country not their own. There's 15 million, give or take, at any moment in time. Of that 15 million, this blows people away when they hear it. 150,000 per year, roughly, are given a new chance at starting a new life with the approval of another country. So 1% of the world's refugees are resettled each year into a new country. Of the 150,000 that are resettled, the United States generally takes between 70 and 80,000 of them. So we take more than all of the other countries that accept refugees combined. Most of the countries that receive refugees willingly and give them a new chance, a new start at life, are Western countries. We take 80,000. The rest of the 70,000 are divided up between these other countries. What's unique about the season we're in right now is that the flood coming out from the Middle East is so huge that, like, you know, Germany alone accepted almost 1 million people last year that fled into their country. They don't, you know, the horsepower, the apparatus, the mechanisms to resettle those people and to do it rightly, screen them all properly, is just not there. But by the time refugees generally get to America, the average refugee has been in a second country, not their own, for an average of 8 to 10 years. They've been vetted thoroughly. And then when we accept them, our State Department vets them on top of the vetting the IOM has done with them. So that by the time a refugee lands in your neighborhood, they've been screened as better than anybody else that's coming from another country to live in our country. Nobody is screened as well as refugees.
I can't imagine any natives being screened as well.
No, we would scream our individual rights are being violated if we got screened like they did. So
that's interesting. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for that, Jeff. And we'll put some of these facts that you stated with this on the website with this podcast, and look forward to the next one.
All right. Thanks, Brian. God bless you, man.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.